All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Friday. It's December 21st. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Buddy, we're going to break down game by game for week 16. Only 2 weeks of NFL regular season left here. Does it feel like, do you feel like we're sprinting toward the finish? Do you think we crawled toward the finish? Like, when you live in a world of sports cycles, which we basically do, it's always like, sort of jumps up and surprises me when a season is almost over. How do you feel as we wind down the NFL season? Do you think it's one of those ones where like we're going to be kind of picking stuff out of a hat here because it's late in the season? Do you think you have a pretty good handle on what's going on? We have 2 weeks left to go, and then we have the playoffs, obviously.
I think I have a pretty good handle on this week. I think trying to look forward to next week, I could see things getting a lot murkier. It's just that there's still so many teams that are still playing for stuff, and that just tends to be... And, of course, the teams that are playing for things tend to be the ones that don't suck. So that tends to be where the good players are and stuff. But, yeah, in the AFC... I'm really only seeing, and I haven't gone and like done the whatever the team by team what they need to get into the playoffs thing just yet. But you have Baltimore in the playoffs at 8-6, and then you have 2 more 8-6 teams. You have a 7-7 team, 6-7-1 team. Like there's just a lot of teams that are still viable. So it's a lot less set in stone than it has been in the past, and that's got to be good for us for DFS purposes, because the worst thing that can happen to you in football is you just lose minutes or opportunity. And the NFC, no different, by the way. You still have 2 7-7 teams on the outside looking in, and then Carolina at 6-8, so you're not missing too much there either.
Yeah, we're going to roll through the main slate of games here, skip over Saturday. If you want to get projections and optimal lineups for the Saturday slate of games, it looks like a pretty good one in terms of just fantasy production, especially with Tennessee as big favorites. You got a decent game with the Ravens and the Chargers. Go over to dfsr.com/deals and just grab a free trial, and that'll give you optimal lineups for those slate and main slate as well. So dfsr.com/deals give you that, but we're going to skip over the Saturday games and just roll into the main slate. We did do a cash game breakdown podcast. We'll nod to some of the guys that we discussed there yesterday. We spent a lot of time going position by position, kind of just breaking down. I think some of the positions are more obvious than others. There has been news that's come out since we recorded that podcast, which we're going to nod to as well, concerning the Patriots and some other injury stuff that we'll try to wade through. So we'll go through these game by game, take a look at just kind of where our projections are landing for each one. The first one, there's been a bunch of line shifts in this game. Green Bay goes in and plays the Jets. The line started with Green Bay as a favorite, then instantly shifted to the Jets as a favorite. And then Aaron Rodgers said he's going to start, then instantly went back to Green Bay being road 3-point road favorites. You know, we've talked about this before, but the only position really in the NFL, really more than any other sport, probably except for baseball pitcher, that can swing a line so drastically is the quarterback. And we saw that almost like in real time play out with Rodgers. Injury news here, obviously, for Green Bay is Aaron Jones is on the IR. Looks like Jamal Williams will be the primary back. He's been not all that effective at times, but we did not talk about him from a cash game perspective yesterday because I think there's better options. But, you know, where do you land on a guy like Jamal Williams? Maybe when we're talking GPPs, it looks like he's probably just going to get the bulk of the running back snaps here for Green Bay.
I think I can play Jamal Williams. I think when we've looked, for the same reason we've played Aaron Jones in the past, right? I mean, Jones was used more often in the passing game, and I think you'd like to see that. But in close games or games where Green Bay's ahead, you can see 20-plus running back touches, and Williams still being priced like a backup means that you can get some value there. So I would need to see what we would actually get from it, because it's not without risk. Like, I don't think he's one of these slam dunk, you know, super chalk guy, fill-in guys that you've seen in the past, like, you know, the first week of Spencer Ware when Kareem Hunt went down or something like that. But I still think he's playable. I think a lot of people are going to consider it. I guess the issue I have right now is, for my cash game purposes anyway, is that I'm really liking these like mid-range running backs that we have, and the high-end one in Zeke that feels like a must for cash. So I think that's why Williams wound up not quite making it into the cash game picks.
Yeah, and what you like to see out of Williams, 5 targets in the passing game last week, 12 rushes for 55 yards. That was one of his actually better games, did score a touchdown. Jets defense is worse against the run this season, so if you're looking for a place to exploit, you know, just the offense here in terms of like what the Jets don't do as well, that's a spot to do it. You know, the passing game, guys like Adams are, you know, pass catchers that we wanted to target in the past as volume target guys. I don't know if you see this as the matchup to necessarily do it. I do think we have more question marks about wide receiver this week than other weeks, but Adams is coming off another 13 target game, 8-119 last week. Where does he rate for you in terms of pay up options at wide receiver? We have him as the 4th overall wide receiver projected right now. probably ends up trending up to third, at least would be my guess before, by the time it's all said and done. Where does he land for you in terms of just safety for cash games?
Yeah, I mean, him being in that third to fourth range in terms of overall projection sounds about right to me. You know, Adams is an interesting guy that I've written up at prior points in the season when opportunity was opening itself up in Green Bay, because he is one of those guys that can definitely fill in as the short pass, as the new run situation when things break right. You know, he's got, let's see, well, averaging more double-digit plus, averaging 11 or more targets in his last five games. That's got to be among the highest in the league. You know, he had a stretch earlier in the season where he was averaging, he had a three-game stretch where he had 14 targets a game. So we know that the plan is to have Adams involved almost regardless of how things are going. And going up against the Jets, you'd have to figure that that's a better matchup than the Bears last week, right? So I wouldn't mind playing Adams, but again, it's just a difficulty of where am I going to get my savings, because I can't play, you know, we talked about Zeke, we talked about Chubb, we talked about Marlon Mack. It's really hard to play all three of those guys and fit a high-end wide receiver. So I think that's why I'd be leaning away from it. But if he wound up, if we decided that Jamal Williams was the play and we had Adams, I would love to play him in cash.
Yeah, I think I pretty much land right with you. When I said he was ranked that, I have him on FanDuel. He's actually second overall on DraftKings in terms of
projection.
Yeah,
where the PPR. Yeah,
yeah, that, and it really matters because he's just such a beast in just full PPR mode. On the Jets side, they are going to be without Nunua again. He sat out last week. Robbie Anderson, kind of a guy that's cropping in and around DraftKings at 4,500. Maybe on FanDuel as well. I need to go double check that. But Robbie Anderson, not usually a guy that I want to play in cash, but it's hard to ignore the target share that he's had, at least over the short term. He's had some decently targeted games. They always seem like they're going to be a little more volatile than I want them to be, especially with the downfield stuff. But how do you feel about a possible Robbie Anderson cash gameplay this week?
I was muting myself. I don't mind Robbie Anderson. I actually wrote him up for cash games this week. I think Anderson, he's the type of guy that if you look at the whole season, you're going to see like many different Robbie Andersons. But I think since Darnold took over, the plan generally has been to give him around seven targets a game. We know that he's got upside for 11, like we saw last week against Houston. And the probably downside for five or so that we saw against New England still exists as well. I do think you'll probably want to go down a little bit at some position somewhere in order to be able to pay up for all those fancy objects that you like, you know? So it's like you're doing your Christmas shopping here. Robbie Anderson is that week of ramen noodles that allows you to get your new big screen TV, you know? So
did you think about that ahead of time, or did you just come up with that right now?
I just came up with that off the top of my head, believe it or not. In spite of the being frazzled from muting myself by accident and embarrassing myself.
Green Bay is a bottom third defense on the season. They're not good. This is not, and if you think that they're playing, if you think the Jets are playing from behind at all, I mean, obviously New York, we'll have to check some weather stuff leading into lineup block as we get into the wintertime months. But in general, I don't mind it. He's coming cheap, and he's just, again, you need to be prepared for a Robbie Anderson five target, two catch, 22 yard kind of game, because he's just not a possession receiver in the way that he gets. That's not how he gets his fantasy points, but he's got a huge upside, no doubt about it. And he's the kind of guy that can appear in GPP winning lineups. You know, he has a three catch for 123 and two touchdown game. He's coming off of 96 yards, seven catches in a touchdown game. These are, at these price points, these are the kind of things that start trending you up toward the top of GPPs. And you just need to be able to prepare yourself to kind of like live with the downside. All right, let's roll through. Minnesota goes in and plays Detroit. Minnesota starts as a 4.5-point road favorite, now up to 6. We saw a Dalvin Cook complete and utter chalk week last week where he basically paid it off. 6-point road favorites is not as good as home, but still you like where he's landing in terms of just like the implied points. He's coming off a 19 carry, 136 yard, and 2 target game. We did not discuss him on cash games, and I'm wondering if we should. I mean, this, a lot of things seem to like line up to have Dalvin Cook as a play again this week, and he's just not projected as high as we have some other guys, but still only 7,100 on FanDuel. Where do you land on Cook here?
It's actually not a matter of projection for me. Like, I think we probably like him about as much as we did last week. It's more of a price question. The reason he was chalk on FanDuel last week is because he was 800 cheaper than this. You know, that's a 12% roughly increase in price, and that's just a lot. Like, that's that's just a lot of price to add to your salary. And if you look at the past game log, yeah, like he can kind of get there, especially if you squint and you're doing PPR type stuff. It can come together for you. But yeah, I think for me, again, we just have, like, if I'm going to compare him to Marlon Mack, he's basically the same guy as Marlon Mack in my mind. And Mack is cheaper and I think just better. I think he's not dissimilar to Nick Chubb almost, except for Nick Chubb is like a safer version of Dalvin Cook to me. So that's kind of where I land with him right now.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of there as well. I think it's going to be interesting to see where ownership lines up because Cook was such a heavily owned guy last week and was so good. And that is just something that can translate on a week-to-week basis. Again, their implied points are pretty high. And if you, now, they did split carries a little bit more than I thought they were going to last week. They were winning. So that helped. Cook had 42 snaps. Latavius Murray had 27 snaps. Latavius Murray did carry the ball 15 times and was in there for series. Like, this wasn't just all garbage time run for Murray. He was in there for a couple series in the first half as well. So that would be the one thing I'd be a little concerned about, especially too if the game starts going completely downhill for them and they don't need to, they're not going to overextend Cook in a way that like the Colts might with Marlon Mack. So I'm just, that's probably where I end up landing. And then we have the receivers for Minnesota, guys that we spent a lot of time talking about early in the season, Thielen specifically, and then to a lesser degree, Diggs. And then Thielen's coming off a 2-target week. Diggs saw the targets with 7. I mean, are we just completely off the Adam Thielen? Is cash game viable? Is even GPP viable at this point with the way that his usage has gone in the short term? It's just dropped off a cliff from where we were kind of discussing him earlier in the season.
Yeah, I think they've found a lot of comfort in passing to the running back, and that's just how a lot of teams are operating these days. I think other teams have realized they can probably scheme for Thielen and deny him some of that just free stuff he was getting underneath early in the season. And at this point, sure, these guys are definitely still big tournament opportunity guys. Like, you know, we know Diggs has the 18-target game in him, right? I mean, we know that there are game scripts where the opponents give it to him, where the Vikings will give the ball to Thielen 15 times. It's just you can't rely on it on a week-to-week basis in the same way that you could early in the season. So, yeah, I'm not going to touch him for cash for sure, but for big tournaments, why not?
I think if you think that, you know, Diggs sees the Darius Slay treatment here and Thielen is the just all of a sudden just has more opportunity because of that, this could be a bounce-back week in terms of just GPP. I think that he'll be off most people's radars because of that. And if you, the price is down to where he is, let me just look real quick on FanDuel. Yeah, he's like the 10th most expensive wide receiver, probably where he should be based on the short-term production. But if you think that Diggs gets shut down in a bad in a bad shadow cover matchup, then I think you could see a bounce back here for Thielen. And I really wouldn't. I'm with you. I would not trust it for cash games. And then on the Detroit side, Kenny Galladay is coming off a big game. He's questionable. I'm hard pressed to see anything I like here except for maybe the Vikings defense.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I land too. Again, Galladay, a guy, he's shown it that he can do it for you in big tournaments. I think if he can turn 8 targets into 146 yards, you know he has, the 15 and 13 target weeks when the opportunity first opened up. It's doable, but nah, not for cash.
And remember, the Vikings, the last time these two teams played each other, it was the game the Vikings just sacked Stafford every single time. They had something like 11 sacks that game.
Oh, God, yeah, it was 10 sacks, I think.
Something crazy. Yeah. So I'm not going to translate that performance onto this one because that was an outlier performance. But even independent of that,
we know that they were able to do something, though, right? And I think for that reason, if you wanted to go there defensively, no one would blame you.
Moving into a game that actually had some news come out here early in the afternoon yesterday. Bills go in and play the Patriots. Josh Gordon now suspended indefinitely for another violation of the league's substance abuse policy. I'm not going to get into the right or wrong of that piece, just to say he's not going to play this week. So I'm going to leave it at that, and we're going to figure out where we land from a DFS perspective on the remainder of the Patriots team. The Patriots have 29 implied points, which is among the highest, if not the highest of the day as I scroll through this. Big favorites here, 13.5-point favorites against a Bills team. I ticked up Edelman just like Edelman was a guy that was kind of in and around cash game projections for us. And on the Gordon news, I gave him like half a target more. One, do you think that's reasonable? Do you think that we just see just a little bit more of Edelman here to make him cash game viable? Because he's a guy that's right now, especially from a PPR standpoint, coming in like 60% of our overall top lineups, especially on DraftKings, and maybe even a little more on FanDuel.
Yeah, I liked Edelman before the news. I think he's just an underrated source of targets. I think, you know, Buffalo being a tough matchup is kind of whatever to me. New England still has something to play for. I think he's the one guy, you know, reminds me of like when Wes Welker was there, where if the Patriots need 11 yards, like he's going to be the guy they turn to. Gronk is a shell of his former self. I don't think they believe in their running game or their passing to the running game to get that kind of yardage when they need it. And again, the Patriots are just like running the risk of having a much worse situation for the playoffs than they probably feel like they deserve. So yeah, Edelman, I think, is coming up on being an every lineup guy for me right now.
Yep, I gave little ticks up to James White out of the backfield. He's a pass catcher that they've shown a willingness to sort of trust in terms of the, you know, passes, the new run kind of thing. Yep. You know, they're big favorites here, so Sony Michel has to be in the consideration. They just played a lot of different running backs, so that's the only issue there. Cordarrelle Patterson, exactly. He saw three targets last week, and they were directly near the end of the game, which I don't know if that was signaling that they kind of, I read something that the Patriots kind of knew this was coming down the pike, and maybe were even informed during the game that this was something that had happened with Gordon, because they took Gordon off the field and ran Cordarrelle Patterson out there for some final series. So I don't know if that just means, because like one thing we've learned with wide receivers this year is sometimes the guy whose role is unchanged is these situations don't change much for them. And then the guy who is going to step in for that guy, that's actually the person that we want to see the most. You know, see the Broncos, see some of these other teams where this has happened this year, the Giants to some degree. I don't know, Cordarrelle Patterson, worth a GPP dart if you think that he's going to be the guy lining up here, or is that like just maybe too deep of a pull?
No, it doesn't seem outrageous. I mean, Patterson, though, he checks the box of a guy who's already somewhat involved in the offense. You know, he was getting 2 to 3 targets a game. Obviously, Gordon and Edelman do very, very different things. I guess the only fly in the ointment of this play would potentially be the Patriots don't seem to feel like they need to have that long ball sort of thing going on in any given game. Like sometimes they do it more often to Gordon, and then sometimes it just wouldn't be there at all, and they would just rely more on the underneath stuff. So I think he's really, really cheap. I think if you heard he was starting, I would put him in lineups just to see what else I could get for my money. But I don't feel like I would absolutely need to either, because the Patriots, more than any other team that I've watched since we've been doing this, are also just like happy to have it be some guy you've never heard of step in, like, and even guys that you have heard of, like Chris Hogan. Like, there's no telling to me that Patterson, it would be a one-to-one thing where Patterson would just step in and inherit all of those Josh Gordon targets.
The Buffalo Bills went into last week, by the halftime of the game, they had no running backs left on the roster. McCoy and Ivory were already out. Ford and McKenzie both got hurt, and they were just out. It was all the running backs. McCoy and Ivory are coming back to play this week. I'm not sure it totally matters here. Maybe you want to dream on a Josh Allen scrambling around kind of thing. He has been able to do it in the past in terms of just getting like a raise his floor fantasy-wise, because he just isn't all that good of a thrower, and then just goes out and, you know, rushes for the 101 and 135 and 99 yards in a game. He's been decent from a fantasy perspective. Did connect with Robert Foster last week. So I guess a GPP, if you, I don't know, you want to take the Patriots run game a little bit or an Edelman kind of short pass thing and dream on Josh Allen, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. And I'm hard pressed to find. There's definitely no safety in it. You can also probably consider the Patriots defense here. Buffalo, only 15.5 implied points. Falcons go in and play the Panthers. Obviously the big news here, Cam Newton's been shut down for the season. That line shifted immediately. Panthers had been 2.5-point home favorites. Now back to the Falcons as 3-point road favorites. Still not, you know, not an overwhelming look here for the Falcons in terms of they're playing the backup quarterback and sort of barely favored on the road. We did talk about Tevin Coleman. What about guys like Julio? Have put it together, especially with the touchdowns of late. You know, the late season Falcons not playing for really much of anything here, but except for pride. Do you think that's enough to get big games out of some of their, you know, key offensive guys like Julio Jones, like Tevin Coleman?
Yeah, I think we talked about Coleman. I think that's a reasonable gamble at this point. I would pay very, very close attention and really want to be sure that the plan was to have Coleman be the main guy on FanDuel, where the $6,400 price tag is a little bit more prohibitive for me, just the way lineups wind up looking when you play him on FanDuel versus when you play him on DraftKings. Or maybe put differently, I don't know that I'm really getting a lot for my savings, you know? So like, I feel like I'm taking on a little bit of additional risk knowing that the Falcons are happy just to have that game where he has 12 carries and someone you've never heard of, maybe it was Ito Smith or whoever, in the past comes in and gets the share of the carries that you weren't anticipating. But Julio Jones, again, he's in that Dante Adams group of guys that, like, sure, I'd like him. I wouldn't be concerned if he were in my lineup, but I don't think I'd go out of my way to prioritize it. He wasn't that great when they played Carolina early this season. I think I'd rather play Adams on its face, even though he's got a pretty good matchup here against Carolina. I just don't think for cash games it's going to be where I wind up landing.
What about thoughts on McCaffrey without Cam? Do you think it just hurts McCaffrey too much to not have Cam there? I mean, McCaffrey's been amazing, so it's been not
has it can't help here. I guess is my general sense, right? Like, I mean, he's has a great relationship with his current quarterback, and losing him isn't great. I mean, I'd like to think that anyone in the NFL who's just on an NFL roster can make the types of passes that Cam makes to McCaffrey. It's not like especially complicated routes. It's more like finding McCaffrey in space in sort of a planned way and letting him do his thing. And sometimes when the play breaks down, they can go to him too. But I think McCaffrey's a good play, solid play. I'd rather play Zeke for 500 less. I don't know that I can play both, but again, in the upside, even the high floor territory, I think he's a good play.
I think you can consider the Falcons' defense here against a backup quarterback that doesn't have much in the way of wide receiver weapons, too. So,
Sure, yeah.
the Falcons right now, we have them as the fifth highest points per dollar defense on the week on FanDuel. Not that we don't have them for an overwhelming amount of points, but the fact that they're 3,400 and they're playing a guy who's barely taken any NFL snaps does strike me as a spot where you could probably take advantage. Again, understanding that, I mean, I guess I think about it, the Panthers actually do have like a little something to play for. The Falcons don't, but again, if you're playing for pride and they're not at risk of like going and trying to get that number one seed overall, so I don't see why they wouldn't just have something like a max effort game here. All right, let's keep moving here. Bengals go in and play the Browns. Browns huge 10-point favorites at home. Bengals been decimated by injury. I had said Tyler Boyd was going to be out yesterday on the podcast, but I guess I was incorrect. He's just questionable to play. But basically, the rest of their team is out. Obviously, they already lost Dalton. Andy Reid's not going to be there. But essentially, left with a team of Jeff Driskel, Joe Mixon, and then whatever poo-poo platter of wide receivers they can throw out there in addition to Boyd. And then you have the Browns with, we talked at length about Nick Chubb yesterday. Any thoughts here? I mean, Mixon's coming off a huge week. We've seen the willingness to just give him the ball a lot, even in maybe not ideal situations. Is this a spot where you could take like a GBP upside plan? Because Mixon's one of the few very elite volume guys, and it's running into such a deficit here, probably in terms of points.
Yeah, I think that's like you probably hit the nail on the head there. I think on the Cleveland side, I think Nick Chubb just looks like, the more and more I looked at it, you kind of brought him up as a cash game play, and at first I was like a little bit less enthused, but I think the floor that he brings, even in the bad game scripts, and the potential ceiling that I don't know that we've even seen unleashed yet. I mean, we saw an excellent game against Atlanta, but he could score three touchdowns in a game at some point. He could, you know, have 200 total yards in that same game. And I think the floor is also high enough to where I feel pretty solid about it. I also think, I was curious to know what you think about Jarvis Landry. I mean, the guy just still is kind of getting the target, still hasn't done much with it. He's also kind of cheap. Is it just like, I mean, the game log is kind of grisly with him, but two of the last 3 weeks we've seen him top eight targets. Can we consider him in a game where we can be somewhat confident that things won't be weird for Cleveland, or is it just not worth the effort?
I just don't think it's worth the effort. I mean, it just doesn't do it. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, eight targets, three catches for 37 yards. He had the 100 yard
game. So
what's
the right number of targets on Landry, I guess, is a good question.
7.5 probably. Like, yeah. I'll look where I have him, but I guess it's something like that number. I've typed in the wrong thing. This is good pod. As I search for something in our database. exactly 7.5. So I was right. I had him 7.5 targets. It seems correct to me. I don't want to go take him to like 8.5, where that would maybe start putting him into consideration. There's no evidence that that's going to be the case. And just this, the conversion issues are just an issue too. Like he just doesn't do anything with these, you know, you look for these guys that want to do stuff after the catch. We just have years now of just evidence that Landry catches the ball and just doesn't do another single thing with it, even when he does catch it. So I just don't, I'm not seeing it. It's kind of just all Nick Chubb here for me in this game. Again, maybe the Browns D, because this Bengals offense is just total garbage. Browns D at 3,000 on DraftKings is getting up there in price, but could be worth it for a team that, I don't know, is going to really, really struggle to put up points. I don't see. They've struggled against bad defenses to do it, and the Browns are not a bad defense. You do have to pay for it, though. 3,000 on DraftKings, 4,400 on FanDuel. Cowboys host the Bucks. Zeke's the only one we talked about a ton. We talked about Dak. We talked about Cooper. Yeah. I don't think we need to really rehash it here. Would you be comfortable in a situation of just chucking all three of those guys back into cash games this week, coming off the shutout? I think outside of Zeke, I think we might be on the opposite side of the – we might be getting them lower owned again, because – a team that gets shut out can just get shut out. But still, this is the Tampa Bay defense. We talked about it a lot, but just get some of the quick thoughts here on the Cowboys offense.
Yeah, I think the quick thoughts on the Cowboys offense are that they're just probably great plays, and I think you're getting them at a slight discount to what you would have to pay if they were really good last week against Indy. They weren't. I think that will scare some people off them. The more I'm looking at quarterback this week, I find it harder and harder to believe that people won't go to Dak. I think I have forecasted... Like, I've done a bad job of giving the community, the DFS community, credit sometimes when how much I think they're going to overreact to news. But I think in the modern DFS cycle, people will be able to look at Dak's broader body of work, and especially the consistency he had been bringing recently, especially since the arrival of Cooper. And I suspect he'll be the highest owned quarterback. I think I was wrong about that last week. I think I forecasted Jackson in a similar spot, and that didn't wind up coming to fruition completely. But he was the best. So I don't know. I like all these guys. We're just going on and on. They're obvious plays in my mind, and some people will fade them, but probably to their own detriment.
Yep, I think that's kind of where I land too. I think that it helps that just the price didn't come up again. I don't mind actually going back to Michael Gallup again in terms of just as an upside GPP play. I know that he didn't see any targets last week, but my guess is if nothing else, that will be the outlier game. And I'm not going to play him in cash like I was sort of more willing to do last week, but I don't want to completely overreact to the guy still played every offensive snap. It just, the matchup just wasn't there. It just wasn't happening in terms of how we're doing it. You're getting a much better opportunity for him on the from Tampa Bay. So from a GPP standpoint, definitely a guy I'll have in GPPs again. I'm not going to overreact from an upside perspective on the zero targets. Tampa Bay, I mean, anything to see here. Jameis, this is another game where you can tell teams that have something to play for, the teams that don't. 20 implied points here for the Bucs. Dallas has been a very good defense. Anything that you like, maybe from an upside perspective, especially if you're going to play Dallas a little heavier than some other teams.
Yeah, I think it's funny when you look at the Bucs over the course of the season, like their offense has always had that little paper tiger feel to it, where it's like, really, Ryan Fitzpatrick 400 yards, really, like Jameis comes in off the bench and goes like whatever 16 for 20 for a million yards, like. And I think I still like, and it was interesting to look at them too, because it was like they don't really have any like new parts, like you're really just kind of counting on big improvements from guys like Fitzgerald and Jameis that we haven't seen in the past. I think I'm still not that excited about the Bucs, but I could see a very strong case for doing a correlation play. Like maybe you take, say, Jameis and Godwin, you know, on a whim, and then you take Zeke going the other way, or maybe you take Dak and Cooper and you take a couple of the Tampa Bay wide receivers going the other way, right? Like I think there's funny things you can do for big tournaments here. I don't know if you want to be sticking your neck out investing in this offense for cash.
Yep, I pretty much agree with that. And this seems like a week of haves and have-nots. You're seeing a lot of lines, a lot of teams that are implied for under 20 points, which is just sort of rare at this point. I mean, that should be sort of rare for the NFL in general, but it really speaks to teams being injured, teams kind of being out of it, not a lot to play for. You're going to start to see some of these implied points just trending lower and lower as motivations for teams dwindle. Another one of these games is the Jacksonville Jaguars going in and playing the Dolphins. Jags imply for 18 points. They're out of it. Dolphins kind of still in it here in terms of the playoff picture. They, I believe, are 8-8 right now. So they're 7-7, which puts them in the hunt for the wild card in the AFC. So and it's reflected in the line where they're 4-point favorites. Frank Gore out for the season. Kalen Ballage is the one that got the majority of the carries in Gore's absence last week. And I read a little bit more about this. And it really, they said it spoke to Kenyon Drake's just inability to figure out pass protection schemes and like just the sort of routes that they and runs that they want the Dolphins to make. Because I was trying to answer the question of why doesn't Kenyon Drake just touch the ball more, but that kind of answered it. Right. Ballage is cheap. He broke off a huge run last week. Jacksonville's a bad defense, but I don't know, we're getting 4-point home favorites here with something to play for. Could you make a case for, I'd be hard pressed to do it in cash, but he's 3,700 on DraftKings. Like the guy could carry the ball 14 times. Like, I don't know. Like, they're kind of favorites. At that $3,700 price tag on DraftKings, have you seen enough from him to have him start maybe creeping into the discussion here?
I don't know. DraftKings will do it to you, right? Like, they'll just sit in front of you and say, come on, you only need 14 touches to get there on this price, right? And I wish I, at the top of my head, had like a good study of like how often we've been baited by those guys in NFL and how often it's worked out. Yeah, that's my feeling too. But it's funny on DraftKings because, like, I don't know, I'm looking at FanDuel lineups currently and I have just like guys I can live with at pretty much every position. And I'd be pretty hesitant to introduce this level of uncertainty into my life on FanDuel. But on DraftKings, like, when you start to think about being able to get significantly high floor options, I think maybe the PPR makes me feel this way, where like, I'm less excited about playing someone like, I don't know, Robbie Anderson, just because I just don't know if he's going to help me out in the PPR perspective. So if I could bump him up to someone like, I don't know, T.Y. Hilton or something, and then I had to live with some cheap risks elsewhere, especially like at running back, I feel like I'm more likely to take a risk on a cheap running back on DraftKings because I can get more for my money at wide receiver by doing that, if that makes sense. So right. I don't know. I can't say I'm super psyched about it, but I could certainly see a case for it.
And would it surprise me for Kenyon Drake just to walk out here and be like the, you know, the primary back? And this has all been just sort of like a hoodwink kind of job. That wouldn't shock me either. I mean, Kenyon Drake still did out. This is not a great comp because Gore played this game, but Kenyon Drake did out snap Ballage last game, 28-23. Gore only had 7 snaps that game. So excuse me, 28-26.
You just hate to see when the guy comes in. Like, one thing we've seen in football so many times is when a guy gets hurt and it screws up the first team reps, then just crazy stuff happens, right?
Yep. Like
teams are just totally unprepared for this seemingly every time. No team prepares for an injury, and they probably shouldn't, right? They have limited bandwidth. And they're like, they literally look down the bench and they're like, you, put a helmet on and get in there. And with a whole week to prepare, I just don't know that you can count on that being the plan again, regardless of how good a guy looked on a per-touch basis.
Yep, I think, yeah, that's where I land. I think there's some GPP stuff for both these guys, by the way. I think you could throw Drake in some GPPs and hope that you get there. He still does catch balls. It still stands to reason he'd be at least like the third down back. The snaps were there. And if Kalen Ballage just entered the game and went the first two series and just went, you know, four carries for 0 yards, is it crazy to think we just see a lot more Kenyon Drake in this game? I don't think it is. And so from a tournament upside perspective, they're still home favorites here. Jacksonville has all but thrown in the towel for the season. I can make a case for it. I would not do it in cash just because of the existence of Drake. But I think from a GPP standpoint, I think there is definitely a lot to like. Houston goes in and plays the Eagles. Eagles are 1-point home favorites here against the Texans with Nick Foles at quarterback. Foles still coming very cheap. We nodded to him on DraftKings where he's only, I believe, 4,700. Just sum that up real quick. Do we trust Nick Foles enough to know that we're paying almost nothing? He's 1,000 less than Dak, paying almost nothing for him, knowing that extra 1,000 on DraftKings really goes a long way to getting guys into your lineup that you can maybe just trust a little bit more from a low variance position like quarterback.
Yeah, I could see playing Nick Foles, to be honest with you. I wrote him up for the Cash Game article this week. I think I gave you the case yesterday on the podcast too, but I just think he, at his core right now, is a pretty high efficiency passer. I think he's somewhat unlikely to kill you. And I think this season he's run bad on touchdowns. You know, like I see a guy, especially in the last two games that he's played, he's completed 59 of the 79 passes he's thrown. Like, that's good. You know, I don't know what else to say. Averaging 300 yards in those two starts last season to finish out the season against the very toughest competition against New England and Minnesota, he averaged more than 300 yards and 3 touchdowns in those games, right? Now, it's a slightly different personnel. I get it, but I think he's a fine play. He's the only guy that gives me pause about playing Dak, because I feel like if Dak's matchup were slightly worse, I would just play Nick Foles and I wouldn't even think twice about it. And I know that that's a high level of confidence for a backup, but he's just not your average backup.
Both these teams definitely have something to play for, so you like to see that out of just a game that this late in the season. Houston 10-4, I would believe, would lock up the AFC South with a win. They're probably going to make the playoffs no matter what, unless it's just a total disaster happens for them. Eagles definitely need to win. They're 7-7, fighting for one of those. Actually, still in the hunt for the NFC East and for definitely in the wild card hunt as well, with the Redskins trending the wrong way. It feels like the Eagles will probably get there, but what you like most about this game is just for sure teams with two things to play for. And then you have the Eagles, who just in general, like in their skill positions, just don't offer a ton of safety. Like Josh Adams carried the ball 15 times last week, 28 total yards. He had a touchdown. The running back snaps went an Eagles way again, 24 for Adams, 20 for Wendell Smallwood, 20 for Darren Sproles. So, okay. Good luck. Good luck figuring out what the plan is going to be with their running game. And then on the Houston side, they kind of have similar issues where the guys have seen basically the same opportunity all season long with really very limited injury issues, and which means that all their prices have trended up to probably where they should be on a week where we're getting value elsewhere. All right, Colts host the Giants. We talked a lot about Marlon Mack yesterday. We talked about Eric Ebron as well with the Colts 10-point home favorites against New York. Only injury news here, still waiting in news on Odell Beckham. He has not practiced this week yet. It really seems like he's not going to play. I don't know why they would just force him in there. And again, it's the Giants, and they just do Giants-y kind of things. And so I'm not, especially, I almost think if this was a home game, they'd be more inclined to kind of throw him out there for the fans than Adam. But that would be just like reading into too much.
No, I don't think that's unreasonable.
We talked about Marlon Mack as very close to a lock cash game play with this kind of line and the usage he's seen. We talked about Ebron as a bounce back guy. What about Luck? Luck's a guy who's thrown a ton this season, has had some big upside games. Giants defense is bad. The Colts are projected for some of the highest point total of the week. Not a guy we talked about a ton in cash, and yet the guy's been on Luck just pretty damn good this season. What are your thoughts on Luck, or is he just kind of too expensive maybe?
I think there's a few things going on with Luck. I think if you're just going to pay up, it'd be tough to convince me that you would want to play Luck over like Ben Roethlisberger, given the Pittsburgh's injury situation at running back. I think Luck was funny. I mean, he went on an absolute tear. It was like 8 straight weeks with 23 or more fantasy points where he saw like basically no DFS ownership. And then the last 3 weeks, most of that has gone to plaid. I mean, He has just two passing touchdowns in the last 3 weeks. This is a crazy stat. So two passing touchdowns in the last 3 weeks. You got that? Mm-hmm. Prior to that, he had 8 straight weeks with 3 or more touchdowns. So I don't know if we're looking at bad luck, Doug, with Andrew Luck.
Oh.
Yep, nailed it. Or if there's just something slightly going on. I mean, we know that coming back with shoulder stuff, he was not throwing the ball as far. He was getting this clean bill of health. Having shoulder injuries myself, you know, I always like to compare myself to these NFL guys.
Obviously.
A lot of similarities. If you can see me on YouTube, you'll know. I have a lot in common with these guys.
I've always thought you're an Andrew Luck type when it comes to, like, just, you know, overall
deep
build
voice,
and
really
metrics.
Tall, huge muscles. Yeah, the whole thing.
Beard kind of trends down the neck a little bit. Yeah, I got you.
And they've been, so, but anyway, this is core. This is, it does right now. I got to get in the shower.
Yeah.
It correlates, like, Luck's recent lack of doing stuff directly correlates with Marlon Mack's rise. And I wonder to what degree that's like an organizational decision to kind of maybe preserve some of this arm for the playoffs, or if maybe that Jacksonville game was a little sobering for them. I mean, he threw 52 times in that game and did stone cold nothing against Jacksonville. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of Luck right now. I still did write him up, or I nodded to him anyway in the cash game article as a guy you could consider. I think if you were going to play someone at his price range, you'd be doing it for the high floor. And given it that we haven't seen that in two of the last 3 weeks, I don't know if you want to go for it this week either.
T.Y. Hilton's another guy that's coming very close.
I like T.Y. Hilton.
Especially on DraftKings. It's still 7,100. He had 8 targets in the game last week where they barely even had to throw the ball because they were just running down. They only threw the ball 27 times. He had 8 targets, so you really, really love that target share. He was also, I mean, he still was kind of fine for 5 for 85. And if you watch the game, he was so close to this being like 7 for 150 and a touchdown. I'll say a touchdown and a half because he basically dropped or was overthrown on 2 or 3 of them. So I know you can't score half a touchdown, but I'm just trying to like say like where like the, probably the median line would be on what this game almost was for him. Because he doesn't get there, the price doesn't really move. So I think it's 7,100, knowing on, especially on DraftKings, if you're getting a Marlon Mack at 5,500 and you're getting a Tevin Coleman at 4,800, now all of a sudden you can kind of start trending up to the 7,000 tier for cash games. And the Julian Edelman, T.Y. Hilton stack is actually pretty close for us for cash games. And I wouldn't be shocked to have it just kind of end up be the case. I'm pretty damn high on T.Y. Hilton in this game. And again, the Colts are another one of these teams. Like, they kind of have to win. They're 8-6. The AFC wildcard race is very tight right now. So this is, hate to say the word must win game, but this does check that kind of box here for the Colts. Giants, we'll see with Beckham. Maybe Sterling Shepard kind of shows up. We talked about Evan Ingram yesterday. You want to take a risk on Barkley because you think that you're just going to run him into the ground and give him all the carries. Worst things that have happened in GBP. And no one is going to own that guy this week, knowing how big of an underdog they are. All right, going into the 4 o'clock games, Rams go in and play the Cardinals. Rams 16-point favorites here. That line started at minus 14 and is up to minus 16 as the Cardinals are just awful. Gurley is questionable and has not practiced all week and says that he's going to play. And I wonder where we land here. I guess he's going to play. And it's just like hard to imagine they run him a lot. And I just don't even know what other like crazy like options they have at running back here. Like, this is a very weird situation here for the Rams. Do you think that we just see, because we're pretty high on the wide receivers, do you think we see Gurley banged up and they just maybe just try to throw the ball a little bit more here? Because the running back situation is I think Malcolm Brown's on the IR. I don't even know who their backup is. I'll look this up as you're talking, but give me some of your thoughts on the Rams here who are expected for a lot of points.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I guess Justin Davis, he's someone who has had a carry in each of the last 2 games. One carry, so I don't know if that qualifies.
I'm showing John Kelly as the next guy up. I'll look this up, but yeah. I mean, you can't trust these guys, right? Like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, Kelly was the other guy. He got 2 carries last week. Like, I don't know who you want to trust. I would imagine it would be a timeshare if Gurley were to miss for whatever reason. I can't say I'm super psyched about playing the passing game here. I think, you know, Josh Reynolds was the target leader last week, and still didn't do a whole lot with it, even on a $5,300 price tag on FanDuel. Woods is the guy we perennially want to dream on. I think I might like Cooks, but the tough matchup with Peterson here makes it dicey to me. I know right now this is awkward to say, because if you're actually a DFSR subscriber and you pay for access to our tools, right now these guys have been in and out of the top lineups all week long, and I'm just having trouble making heads or tails of a number of things. The first is what the plan will really be in this game. Like, You know, will they come out and try to establish the run with Gurley? Will they even bother? You know, I don't totally know. I get that they're still battling for home field advantage. I don't know how much that exactly matters to them. I would imagine they certainly want that first round bye, though, and
yep.
with Chicago still lingering. I mean, if they could have just won any of the last 2 weeks and Chicago had lost, I feel like it would be a no-brainer. Like, they'd be just sitting Gurley and moving on with their life. But I just can't say with any great degree of certainty what the plan is right now.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that makes me trust this Woods situation even just a little bit. And I get that, like, I get about being skeptical about it. But he, so if you're looking at how they roll Patrick Peterson around, they do kind of split this, they split him out on the edges, and they never bring him into the slot. Woods runs 53, 54% of his routes from the slot. So I think he'll fully avoid.
Is that Peterson. On the season or is that with Kupp out?
That is on the season. So,
right, so you would imagine it's gone up since Kupp has gone down.
Yes, exactly. They've moved him. Right, that's exactly what they've done. They moved him into the slot more. They range these guys all around, by the way. So it's like they more than other teams, they will just they'll run these guys all into different formations that McVay kind of has. But either way, he's going to primarily run out of the slot here. He has one of the best multipliers that we have in our system for an individual wide receiver right now. So he is just looking at, he's like a 5 or 6% upgrade over, you know, over league average, just matchups that you're going to see. I think I feel okay about it. I kind of even, again, feel a little bit better about it because of the Gurley thing. And this game could be over at halftime. Like, I just don't know. So that's my only...
The last time they met, those of you will recall, in week two, the Rams won 34-0. And they were up 19.
The Cardinals are terrible. Yeah.
And it was a complete embarrassment of a game. Cooks did go 7 of 9 for 159 yards in a game where he didn't really need to do anything in the second half. So... I get it. It's a good matchup. They killed this team in the past. They should do whatever they want on offense. And you better hope that you guess right in terms of who gets the production.
All right, two more games to go for here for the 4 o'clock. Chicago goes and plays San Francisco. Chicago 4-point home favorites against the 49ers. I'm not seeing a ton that I love here on either side of the ball. It's really tough to run any guys into the Chicago defense from a DFS perspective on anything more than a short slate, and even then it's tough. And then Chicago, they're just the way they run the ball. Howard runs it, doesn't get anything in the pass. You're kind of dreaming on touchdowns for him outside of maybe just the Bears defense, but again, you're paying for them. Anything that you like here, and then we'll get into the Steelers and Saints.
Yeah, I don't really love any part of this game. I think the Niners are kind of ruled out based on a tough defensive matchup. Chicago doesn't really bring anything offensively. And to your point, they're just really expensive on defense. And that's one thing we basically haven't done all season is pay up a defense. And I won't be starting this week.
All right, final game. And it has a lot to discuss here. Steelers go in and play the Saints. The Saints right now are 5.5-point favorites, but I'm going to start on the Steelers side with the injury stuff. So one, James Conner was listed questionable, but if you read the quotes from him, it really does not sound like he's going to play. Like, he has not practiced all week, and he kind of in his last quote said, I'm close, but I'm just not ready. So that was Thursday afternoon. He says this after practice. We'll see. Today's Friday at 11:30. We'll see what happens today during practice. It does not, that to me did not sound like a guy who's going to go full pad practice. So, and then the other thing is, during practice yesterday on Thursday, Juju Smith-Schuster left the game, left practice with a groin injury. This is, leaving practice is a bad sign. Now, we have no definitive news. Maybe he just tweaks it and they're just kind of playing it safe. Typically, though, when you leave practice with an injury, you leave practice because you're injured. Like, I don't have any definitive news on it, but
that's,
man.
That's a really good take, though.
Well, I mean, I just mostly mean that, like,
right, it's not like, oh, we're going to limit this guy because just to rest him. Like,
no, this is a new injury. This is like, this is what I mean. It's like, that's mostly what I mean. This is not something that was a problem before, and it is a new injury. And new injuries can be something that go away the next day, or they can be problematic. We're going to learn a lot about the Steelers here, I think, from Friday and Saturday's kind of practice and news cycle. I'm going to feel pretty good about saying that Connor's not going to play and Jalen Samuel is going to get all the snaps here. So let's start with him. He's coming off a week, obviously, that he looked like the Steelers just can kind of run out anybody at running back. And the guy's going to be pretty effective. 19 carries, 142 yards. Did see two targets. Outsnapped Stephen Ridley 39-6. The fact that he's playing on all downs, independent of game script, the Saints are a good defense. Where would you slot Samuel? The price has come up, but where do you slot him among some of the other running backs that we've talked about so far here?
Yeah, I think it's hard to make a case that Samuel isn't a good play. I mean, he's coming into this game with a super high total. I think we've seen him now. They used him hardcore in the running game last week against New England, which is what I had concerns about. He's very effective. They didn't need to use him as much in the past, but when they have gone to him in the past, the guy's converted his last 12 targets into... quick math, 114 yards. So that's a really effective option in the passing game as well. It does look like they've kind of leaned on him as the guy in terms of, you know, being a somewhat reliable three down back. Ridley touched the ball just three times last week, and importantly, no targets in the passing game once again. So yeah, I like Samuels a lot. I think if we had definitive James Conner news, I could see a case for playing him over Marlon Mack. So
wow, I don't think I'd go there, but it's interesting that it's even a discussion.
I think it's a discussion. Or Nick Chubb or one of these guys. Like, I think he's cheap enough, and you're starting to get enough savings that it could make a material difference.
He's 1,200 more than Mack on DraftKings. We have Mack's projected right now. I bumped Samuel back to full touches. We have Mack projected for just a little bit more, and then on FanDuel.
So yeah, on FanDuel he's cheaper than Mack. I guess that's the point I was making. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I didn't even see the DraftKings price. I assumed it was tracking the same way.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. This one will be one to discuss. I don't know. I think the Smith-Schuster thing is going to be a big one too. So I'm not going to just go out and assume he's going to be out, but let's just nod to it really quick just in case he is, because we're not doing another podcast before our Twitch stream. If Juju plays, I think he's probably in a good spot, but if Juju's out, what do we want to do with targets? Like, you can't go totally crazy on a guy like Antonio Brown. But Eli Rogers did jump back in. Saw
I was
going to
say Eli Rogers. I think you could see him slide into that role again. He was effective on those four targets. I think you could bump Antonio Brown. New Orleans is kind of funny because they have this really divergent set of numbers where they can be tougher on wide receiver ones than they can be on the guys downstream from them. James Washington's been another guy. He's got now five straight weeks with three or more targets. And he hasn't been very good, but you at least know he's out there.
One thing about him real quick before we move on, he did out-snap Rodgers 44-28 last week. James Washington.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, and I don't know if they, again, it's not always a one-to-one thing with wide receivers. Like, a lot of times teams are looking for a guy who will do something similar to the guy who's going out, right? So you'll pay attention to it. It kind of stinks that it's a 4:25 game. We just might not know before the game starts. Pittsburgh definitely is going to want to put their best foot forward here. With the playoff situation right now, with Baltimore breathing down their neck as they've, they pulled themselves out of it a little bit last week with the Patriots win, but they're still not out of the woods yet. So you're going to want to definitely keep a close eye on this one and try to figure out who's going to play and who's not.
And this is finally the final thought here on the Saints. It depends what the Saints' motivation is here. They're obviously home favorites. They are 12-2 and have already clinched the division. They are nearly locked for a home field bye, or a first round bye. With the Bears, kind of, like, they're two games up on the Bears, and I'm not sure who owns the tiebreaker there. So, I mean, because the reason I mention this is because I kind of love Kamara in this spot.
But they could lose it to LA too, right? They're only one game up on LA.
Yeah, but I'm saying for the first round bye. Now, home field advantage, so for home field advantage, they're in the driver's seat for that as well. And I think they would clinch it with a win here. But I don't know all the tiebreakers. I was just gonna say about Kamara. I think this is a great spot to play Kamara in terms of you are gonna get very low ownership on him, I believe, based on like having to pay up for wanting to probably pay up for guys like Zeke just to start and some other great running back options like we've already discussed that the rest of the industry these guys aren't going to be lost on the Marlon Mack and Tevin Coleman's and Nick Chubb's of the world. But Kamara, especially on DraftKings, Kamara is way cheaper than these guys. Like, he's the same price as Chubb. We actually have him projected for slightly more than Nick Chubb there at 21.64 and on way less touches because his touches are just worth a lot more. He's coming off a 14 rush attempt, 9 target game last week. I think I like Kamara as like one of my top just overall GPP targets, and I'm actually wondering how much people will even talk themselves into him in cash just because of home favorites kind of probably wanting to win, great implied total. Give me some quick Kamara thoughts here before we get
out. An interesting GPP play, not where I would land for cash by any means. I just think why, like, when there's a guy who can get the big target share games but also can not turn it into much production, even in solid matchups. You just got a long stream of games where he was scoring like 10 to 14 fantasy points a game. Really cool upside. Definitely don't mind him from that perspective. I feel like I can do better in Casho.
Yep, I think I'll land there too. I do like the Michael Thomas of the world, especially if Pittsburgh keeps it close and they want to, and the Saints just are really like looking for that win. I do think there's a lot of GPP upside on the Saints. That's not going crazy to say that. I just think the ownership on them will be a little lower than expected. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com/deals. We'll get you started on our projection system. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA. It's all NHL. It's all covered under one subscription package. So go check that out. Buddy, enjoy your week 16 in the NFL. Mm-hmm.